September 20th, 1989. Bill Cockrell interviewed by Kay Beagle in his office in Signal Hill, California.
Shell had memberships. Yeah. Mobil had memberships. But do you think that PepsiCo would ever buy a membership? To this day, they've never owned a membership from a petroleum company. We had a few people that were a little bit arrogant, and they would ask their members when they would come in there, why don't you take a membership? Oh, well, why do we need a membership? We have people that invite us. And they'd come over there for lunch, but they never owned a membership, and they don't to this day.
That's incredible.
It really is. It really is.
Because not only do they have interest in Signal Hill, they have a big refinery in Wilmington, and it's just all over.
Well, that's another thing that you wondered how the refineries we had on Signal Hill, which they were right over in this area and here,
yeah.
Why they were as successful as they were, because Shell and Texaco and Arco all had big refineries over in Wilmington. Boy, they cleaned their act up. I lived in Wilmington at one time, and there'd be times that you'd think the refinery was in your backyard.
Weren't the refineries on Signal Hill more like topping plants?
Oh, they weren't like, no, you bet. Well, let me put it this way. Those refineries that we had on Signal Hill were here. We called them, they were like tea kettles in relation to a refinery, and they were never upgraded to the point. If you tried to operate a refinery like we had there today, you'd go out of business, because you've got to have your new style of refining to... But you have to treat your oil better and different to put it into the end here. But no. They were in a way you wouldn't really call them refineries. And they didn't go to the nth degree with what they did. They run out gasoline and the bottom ends of it. In those days, there was places for it because they used. But we called it bunker fuel, to operate the ships and things like that. And there was a market for what they did. But these other refineries, an up-to-date refinery, today, what was their bottom, they'd take it and start over with it. No, it's in all. Well, but that's not only with this. That's true in everything today. We're living in a different world than we were back then.
Yeah. Tell me some more about starting the petroleum club.
Well, in 1953, we decided that we were going to, that it was time that the oil men did something for the industry. We had a few meetings, and we decided that we were going to organize and build one. The first one we went in was with Art Morgan up on Atlantic Avenue, just this side of San Antonio. He had a restaurant there, and we had the petroleum club up above that, and he furnished the food from down below. Brought it up. And our first, it was more of a man's club at that time. And the first 350 people that joined had to be in the oil industry, and they were called charter members. Morgan began to get a little unruly with us, that is, he could see that we had tremendous crowds, and we had all the money off of the bar, and he didn't like that. So he decided that he wanted a bigger share of it, and we weren't too happy. We were upstairs, and we had more people at time than the facilities would actually take care of. So he offered us a certain amount of money to vacate, and we went down where we are now on Lynn and bought the property and built the club. And at that point, we made it more of a family club. That is, we up there, we only had night affairs. Well, we had a dance every Saturday night. We didn't, now the club we have now, we're open every night except Monday. And the women became more active in the club. They have their own charter, and they elect their own officers. And but the club has been a very good club. But now, our charter members, like I told you, we had 350 charter members. Today, there's only 20-some of us left. I wouldn't say they all are. We've had a few members, like Wilbur Harrison. He was a charter member, and he went to Kansas. That's where he came from, and but he still retains his membership, his charter membership. But there's at our last annual meeting, I don't want to say definite, but to them it was 25 or 26 was all that was left, as I remember. We have between 600 and 700 members, but they're associate members, or we have a rule that we can take in one-third of members that are not in the industry, like doctors and lawyers. But most of the people are semi-associated with the industry. Now, I brought a book here I'm going to give you.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I think you'll enjoy reading it. It tells a whole lot about the Alaskan, about the spill up there.
Okay.
This was put out by Chevron, but Exxon, the one that's in trouble up there. But I think that it'll give you a lot of the history on the oil, and they put those out quarterly, and the activity that's going on in the industry. And
that was great. Thank you very much.
And I'm going to give you this one, too. I get one of these once a month. That tells you what we're doing in as far as the Navy's concerned. There's a lot of good information in there, and you've already read the article, so we'll throw that paper away.
No, I'll take this along and make sure it gets in the sitting on
their
library if they already have it.
I'm sure they already have it. But the thing that, you know, the main reason I had talked to you about when I saw this in the paper, and I think it gives you a good description that we're completely surrounded by the city of Long Beach. And it truthfully, I still feel down deep in my heart that someday Signal Hill will be a part of Long Beach. I can't believe that we're going to, as oil gets away, and you build bigger and finer homes, and you get a higher class of people living in them, they're going to demand more, and I'm just afraid that Signal Hill will not be able to live up to those standards.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you can get enough people that can vote it to go over, I wouldn't want you to quote me saying that, because I hate to see this happen. But now, you can't help but from driving up and down the streets to see the things now, like the school that you had over there that was there for years. Now they moved it out. And there's death on getting McMillan moved out. And they're not what I want to call oil-minded. But on the other hand, I can't be too bitter because I have gotten along with this council very well. A lot of people are very unhappy with me. But now, here a while back, I had quite a bit of dirt brought in. I wanted to do some work on one of the properties. And instead of waiting until the city come and was unhappy about it being there, I called them immediately and told them I was having this dirt brought in and why I was having it brought in. And they were very accommodating. Never said a word. But if they had saw that and come over there and want to know what's this doing here, and I tried to tell them, well, we own the land here and we're going to do this, we're going to do that, that don't go over so big. But they thanked me for calling them, and they said they'd keep an eye on it. I told them, I said, I have a person watching this because I'm afraid that we'll be getting a lot of rubbish in here. And they said, well, don't worry about it. We'll keep an eye on it for you. And I have to say that the city has been, I don't want to say they've bent over backwards, because if some of the other operators got that, they'd be unhappy. But I would have to say that I can't complain. If I've had a problem, I've went to them. I haven't waited for them to come to me about it. I really sort of feel sorry for the council, because they've got a big chore. This auto mall, getting this, now they're finding out a lot of things. They're trying to clean this land up themselves, and they're finding out that it's not as simple. But it's to the point now, they went to the county for help. And it's to the point now that the county wants their finger in it when they're going to do something. And have you been around for the cleaning up any of the property?
Yeah, I drive down Cherry.
You what?
I drive down Cherry all the time.
Oh, well, Cherry's too well developed now.
But I mean, for Midway 53 used to be in there.
Oh, yeah. Well, now, you know, that's cost a tremendous amount of money to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you live?
I live in North Longview.
In North Longview? Well, when you leave, you go over to California and go up California to Willow. And just before you get to Willow, you will see where they've cleaned all the dirt out because they want to put a building in there. I want you just to slow down long enough to look in that hole. Now, what happened there in the late 20s, the railroad track used to go up through there. And the trains, the track was low enough that the trains was below the street. And when they abandoned the railroad coming up through there, they sold that property. I looked at it. And I wasn't, as I say, I wasn't in love with property. And I didn't buy it. You could have bought it for a song, and you could have sung your own song. The lots are only 90 foot deep, and they got a 5 foot alley, or 10 foot 5 on each side, which is practically worthless, particularly if it's an industrial property. You can't get a big truck down it. And this gentleman had a deal for Safeway to put a store on it where they're get the stuff that go to the different stores, warehouse. And he fooled around. He had a permit to build on it. And he fooled around until these laws got different, and he had to go in there and clean that out. The other point I wanted to bring to you was that railroad track was about 20 feet below the ground level. And in the earthquake, everybody looked for a place to get their stuff. Now, you'd be surprised, and they just let dump, had dirt up on top of it, but it still had, and some of them was rocks bigger, and I don't know how they actually got them in there, big as that chair. And they had to go in there and go all down to that 20 feet to clean that out. Now they're going to have to go and get good dirt put back in there. But they're working over there right now. I just want you to go out there and take a look at that. It's unbelievable unless you're actually around and see what's going on.
Another thing I wanted to ask you about is the Mounted Police, how you got involved with them.
Well, there's two types of Mounted Police. One was called the Mounted Guard, and the other is the Mounted Police. The Mounted Police is the one that rides the silver.
Mm-hmm.
I don't belong to Mounted Police, okay. I belong to Mounted Guard. That's a Long Beach deal, and it was formed during and before the earthquake to ride the rivers, and they could call us out to do anything that we needed to do on horses up and down the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another thing that we were, our property that we owned and that we operated out of was on Wardlow over next close to the river. And that was a strip of land that was in the county. And if we had a problem or a fire or anything, we weren't supposed to call Long Beach. We were supposed to call up halfway up to Los Angeles. But the city always came to our rescue. And everybody that belonged to the Mounted Guard owned their own horses. And we were rode in parades and things like that. But we always worked under the jurisdiction of the police department of Long Beach.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the silver group, most of them belong to the other group, too. But we, I'd kind of like to say it's a little bit like explaining to you the Masons. You have one group, and then you have the Jesters. They're the fun group of the Masons. They get in on all the fun activities, and you find most of the ones in the Mounted Police, the silver group, are pretty well healed. That is, they get along pretty good. But I would say that the city, as far as we were concerned, we couldn't ask for anything better if we had a problem. Like they were out there, if we had a fire or anything, they didn't worry about crossing the line. They come right out and took care of it. And then when the county decided that we couldn't, they were no longer, they called them shoestring strips,
mm-hmm.
that they weren't going to allow any more of them. And they notified everybody that was in the area that owned land that they had to vote on it. And we could have either went to Long Beach or we could have went to Carson. And they all voted to go to Long Beach. So we're in Long Beach now.
Yeah, and is that where you kept your horses and stuff after?
No, I kept my horses right up here on Signal Hill that time. You couldn't do it now. the Jones boys, which owned Misupply,
yeah.
They have their horses here, but they're not down where mine are. I had my horses just over here a couple of blocks. I had a barn there and had my horses there. All the kids in the neighborhood about once a week would come up and want to ride the horses. They were a lot of pleasure. But then after it got to where I couldn't keep them here, I kept them over there. They had areas over there who would keep the horses. And when I got to where it was more difficult to ride them and take care of them, I'm still a member of amount of yards. I don't know how much longer we're going to get to be over there because they're building all around it. In the city, you don't have as much city protection. We had a girl named Ann Manny that was she was assistant to the manager down there for years, and she was a horsewoman. And, well, she was the one that had put the idle trails, city used to advertise from the mountain to the sea. And they used to, well, we could drive or ride right down the river, clear down to the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd take pictures of it and advertise that. But we've had people that have come in that are not horse people, and you don't have that setup that you had before. But I'm afraid that I would say another 5 years, but there won't be any horse people. But they did agree that the area where they were, that it wouldn't be bothered, but it's our own fault, and we have now, part of the land we have, it's leased to one of the fellows, and he's for rental, and they have all types of storage over there. People have old buses and stuff, and they're not going to put up with that forever. And while I feel sorry for the fellow that's got it, he's making a good thing out of it. But they build an awful lot of nice houses around there too.
Mm-hmm.
And the gal that got beat out this last time, she didn't like horses. She wasn't a horsewoman at all. But this Belinsky that took her place, he's a lot more lenient. He's not easy to get along with. She come to my house. I live on Vine and Bixby on the corner. And she come to my house one night, and I was listening to the president's speech.
Yeah.
And she wanted to know if she could count on my support. And I told her I wasn't sure. And she said, "What do you mean you're not sure?" She said, "Do you have anything against me?" And I said, "Well, not particularly, but I said, I feel it's a man's job." Oh, boy, she like to flew apart. And I said, besides that, I said, if you're the type of a politician that you ought to be, I think you ought to be home listening to the president's speech. That's what I was doing, and I said, I'd like to finish that. Boy, she almost fell down, down off of the back step. But she had her own, and she fought for what she thought was right, and I can't condemn her for that. And but we were getting to the point where we had more females on the council than I thought you needed. Although I like Jan Hall. I think she's a good worker, and I've supported her, and I didn't think she had any chance of beating Steele, and I don't think she will, unlike anybody, will beat him the next time, because he's working for it right now. And well, I think Clark would have liked to have it, but Clark didn't want to do that kind of work that it took to get out there, and he didn't want to spend the money that it takes to get out there.
Mm-hmm.
But Keel, right now, is doing things that's going to get votes for him. And he's elected or just given the title of being his district man, and they're out trying to get set up for people that's going to spend $250 to go to a dinner. Well, I think if you spend that much to go to a dinner, you'll vote for
him. Yeah.
I think he's half right.
One of the things he told me on the phone was about trying to start a bank in Signal Hill.
Well, we tried to put a bank on before they ever had one here.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I'm not sure now whether there was 12 or 15 of us. It was all business here on Signal Hill. And that is, we didn't live here. I mean, we were business people of Signal Hill. And we applied for a federal bank. And a man named Larson at that time was the one that was in this district that we had to talk to. And we went up to Frisco to talk to him. And it was right at the time that there had been three or four people that got into trouble with horse racing and stuff like that, that just had banks. And they were pretty rough on letting out quite an amount. It cost us quite a bit of money because you had to give them a location where the bank was going to be. And you had to give them the reason. Well, when we went to Frisco up there, they had a big map, I'd say just almost the size of that wall right there. And we went in and had a talk with him. He stuck a pin in where this was, and they had a deal out there about this long, and we were getting ready to go to lunch. And he told his secretary, he took and drew this circle. He told her, he said, I want you to check this out and come back, and I want to know what that area supports. And when we come back, why, he sat down, and he said, don't look good. He said, the income for the people within your area are very low-income people. It was kind of true. We knew that, but we told him that we weren't depending on that area to support us, that we felt that we had the oil industry here that would support us. And he went on to explain to us that that still had to have a bearing on the other, because how is this going to develop for you? We want to look at what the possibility of the area developing. And but he was very polite. He was very nice about it. And he told us, he said, we will be down in the area. We want to interview each one of you separately. And the first thing he told us before we went down, he said, now, if you've got anybody that has any bad history back of them, you better get them out, because said, we'll know before we get through. And then when he come down and interviewed him, I guess I was about the sixth or seventh when he interviewed, he said, will you be able to get along without any return for the money you're going to put in for 3 years? And I said, I think so. And he said, well, now what about, are you going to be interested in being a director with your name on the window? And I said, well, not particularly, because I said, I have plenty to do myself without this. Well, he said, I'm glad to hear you say that, because he said, everybody else wants their name on the window. And, but they turned us down. And the other thing they looked at was, how close were you to other banks that's within a certain period of this? And the latest bank that had been given a permit was Bank of America, and it was on Magnolia and Willow. And he said, well, I have to tell you that that bank is not doing too well. Now, he said, to go into competition, you're not going to draw any of the competition that's in that area. They were very frank about it. And we were applying for a bank at the same time that Joe Ball and his group was applying for a bank out on Anaheim. And he told us, he said, this fellow told us, said, I don't think you can get it under the environment and everything that you're wanting to put the bank in. But he said you can still go back to Washington, and he said you've already went and spent a lot of money. So we knew Fred Hauser at the time, and we called Fred for some support. And I was a little burnt up at him because I felt that we had supported him and I thought he could do better. And he told us, he said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. He said, I'll guarantee to get you in the door. But he said, beyond that, I don't want to get exposed and have to help you. And he didn't either, but he did get the door open to go in. And we finally just give up the ghost because it looked like a losing battle. But Joe Ball and his group didn't. They went ahead and got that bank out there. And then eventually got the other bank on San Antone and Atlantic. But now that's Queen City Bank now. That was before Queen City coming in.
The Bank of San Pedro?
No, no. Bank San Pedro.
I can't remember the other bank. I know there was another bank.
Well, Citizens. Took it after we, that is, they took it from Ball to them, and then they sold it to Queen City. But the main thing they were after, and the thing that they impressed with us exclusively, that they wanted to be sure that you were buying the bank for a business purpose. They didn't want you to get a bank and then turn it around and sell it to somebody that's associated with drugs or something that was a, that was the main thing that they were concerned with. And drugs go back a lot further than a lot of people realize or imagine. But, but they were very courteous, I have to say that. They didn't, but they just told us that they couldn't believe that within 3 years we could make the bank a successful bank. And they don't like banks to fail.
One of the things you told Cal Alexander is that you had some other dealings with Joe Ball.
Well, Joe Ball's been my attorney all my life.
Yeah. And I guess I was surprised about the bank story because you told him that you dealt with Farmers and Merchants.
Well, I've been with Farmers Merchants all my life. I can tell you why I went to Farmers and Merchants. I needed some money in the security market. And then, before the break in 1929, I had an account with security. And I went to security, I needed $50,000. And they wanted a full financial statement, and I gave it to them, and they said, well, we can, we've had okay out of this bank, but we got to get an okay out of L.A. But he said, I told him I wasn't going to put up all of my securities. I'd put up, and I told him what I wanted to put up. Then they come back and said, no, you'll have to put them all up. And I said, well, I want to tell you something. Now, if you don't believe I've got them, I'll go down in the safety box and show them to you that I do have them, but I'm not putting them all up. And they said, well, why wouldn't you put them up? I said, well, my wife's folks are back east. Mine are back east, and they're both getting up in years. And I said, I might need some money in a hurry, and I just want a little bit to reserve. And they said, oh, don't worry about it. We'll take care of it. I said, well, I don't want to go that far. So they said, well, we'll see what they say in L.A. And they come back and they said, no, you got to put them off. I'd never been in the Farmers Merchants Bank before, and I went up to Farmers Merchants, and I told them I was in need of a loan. The fellow said, well, this is a good place to come. He said, what do you have for security? Instead of telling them everything I had, I told them what I would put up.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I think we'd have any trouble with that. And I said, well, I'd have to go down to the safe and get them. And he said, fine, I'll get the papers drawn up while you're going to get them. But I had to go down, walk a block to go down and get them, and I brought them back up there. He had the papers put in there all finished and had a cashier check for me. I gave him the securities, give me the check. And I started back down to security, and further I went after I got. And I turned around and came back up to Farmers and Merchants and deposited in the bank. And then I came the next day and gave them a check to have them draw my money out of security. About a week later, I got a letter from the security bank wanting to know what happened. Well, it was a pleasure to tell them what happened. And they called on the telephone and said, well, now we're going to pick that loan up to Farmers and Merchants, and we're going to transfer your money back. And I said, no, you're not. You're not going to bother that. And I've been with Farmers and Merchants ever since. And they've been very good to me. And, well, oil operators, that's the one that handles my water, got into a problem, and we needed a letter of credit for $2.5 million with the sanitation district, and they were having trouble getting it, and I went down and talked to Kenneth, and Kenneth said, well, I'll take care of it for you. So my relation with the bank has been tough. I knew Gus, and I've known pretty near all the officials in the bank, and I just, well, I don't think there's a, for a little person that there's any better bank than Farmers and Merchants. I think Kenneth's not quite as lenient as his father was, but he's still a pretty good boy.
Yeah, I have to ask you about one of your oil wells. I took my mother with me. I took my mother to the doctor in your community hospital, and you said that you had some oil wells down there, and so I took her down around the traffic circle, and we looked at one of your oil wells. And she said, that's oil number 71.
Yeah, that's right. That's who I bought it from. It was drilled by O'Donnell, old Jim O'Donnell.
And I said, well, who drilled it? And she thought, in fact, she thought it was Jim O'Donnell.
It was.
But she said, I had to ask you who you bought that oil well
that's
from.
That's right. I didn't buy it from Jim O'Donnell. Jim O'Donnell had a couple of boys, and I think one of them, excuse me for the way of explaining, he was an illegitimate boy, but he took care of it. And when he was, in fact, we bought more property than that from him, but he gave this well to this boy to take care of. And it wasn't, the income coming in monthly wasn't quite fast enough. So he up and sold it. Yeah, that well was. Now, it's a small world, isn't it?
Yeah, I think my dad might have worked on that oil well.
Uh-huh.
Because, otherwise, she couldn't really remember how she knew it was old 71.
Uh-huh.
But when we got there, that's what the first thing she said.
Well, that's, she's sure right.
What else should I have asked you about?
What else should you have asked
yes.
me about? Well, I don't know. I've been doing a lot of talking. The person that interviewed me when they wrote this article in the Press Telegram, that individual was a pretty sharp individual. He asked me an awful lot of questions.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote up the article, and I think he did a better job writing it up than I did of telling it to be truthful with you. But the industry's been very good to me, and it's taken very good care of my family. I have 6 grandchildren, and all 6 of them have graduated from college.
Great.
I've had 4 of them going to SC at one time. You almost need a tunnel into the Bank of America for that. Hello, Bert. No. I've worked hard all my life. I've worked long hours.
Yeah.
And my son, when he got out of the service, what do you know, Bert? Pretty good. When he got out of the service, he went to work for me and has been with me ever since. And in fact, he owns 25% in all of the companies. He has some business of his own, too, that he operates. I could have never done all the things that I have done without him or without help. You have to have help, and you have to have dependable help. Your success, I'd have to say, is greatly responsible for the people you associate with. But I think you'll find that I have a pretty fair reputation in the industry. I'm proud of it.